listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
Some folks will tell you the blues is a woman, some type of supernatural creature. My mother would tell you if she could about her life with my father, a strange and sometimes cruel gentleman. She would tell you about the choices a young black woman faces. It's falling in love with some man, a deal with the devil. In blue terms, the tongue we use when we don't want nuance to get in the way. Well, we need to talk straight. My mother chooses my father after choosing a man who was, as we sing it, of no account. This man made my father look good. That's how bad it was. He made my father seem like an island in the middle of a stormy sea. He made my father look like a rock. And is the blues the moment you realize you exist in a stacked deck? You look in the mirror at your young face, the face of my sister carries, and you look and you know it's the only leverage you got. Does this create a hurt that whispers, how you going to do? Is the blues the moment you shrug your shoulders and agree a girl without money is nothing, dust to be pushed around by any old breeze compared to this? My father seems briefly to be a fire escape. This is the way the blues works. It's sorry wonders make trouble look like a feather bed, make the wrong man's kisses a healing. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Your host Rod and
Karen.
We're in the house on a Sunday.
We is.
Afternoon. While the tournament's going on, okay guys. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Carolina plays yet, but you know, just gotta make out the first weekend. That's all that matters. Anyway, we chilling, you know what I'm saying? Glad y'all can make it in there, darn.
Me too.
Of course, you can find this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Just search the Black Guy Who Tips. Leave us 5-star reviews. We'll read them on the show. We love when people do that.
We do.
The official weapon of the show is
the taser.
An unofficial sport
is bullet ball
and bullet ball extreme. And today's podcast is brought to you by Shadow Dog Productions. We got a couple audio play albums out on Spotify and Tidal. You can go check them out. The Best of Rod and Karen is one of them. The other one is Sunspot and Other Ratchetness. Check it out. Let us know what you think, man. We hope you enjoy these.
We enjoy doing them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. It's also the day after St. Patrick's Day, so I'm sure white people wore that fucking dilly dilly shit out all day yesterday.
What the hell is dilly dilly?
That stupid ass commercial for beer. And the white people be dilly dilly is what happened when your marketing department don't have no black people in it, and white people be like, let's invent our own slang.
I missed that commercial.
Yeah, white people have only made two slang terms that I like that stuck, and that's cuck is a great one. That's not ours, that's theirs.
Oh, that's definitely not ours.
Cuck is a pretty good one. I'm appropriating that. And then the other one, of course, is nigger. But I mean, those are the only two terms they ever came up with. I was like, you know what, white people, I can't even top that. That's good.
Can't top that.
So anyway guys, we got all kinds of stuff to get into. We can get into some news and whatnot, because news is still happening. All right, guys.
Yes.
Charleston shooter Dylan Roof's sister Morgan said to the protesting students, because they had that national day where all the students walked out of mm-hmm. class, and the schools are planning on suspending everybody that did it. There were schools that like offered another, like an assembly to mourn the students who died in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Some schools actually locked down where students couldn't even leave if they wanted to.
Right. Like, there's been all kinds of like responses to this. Her response was, I hope y'all get shot. She's the younger sister of the Charleston shooter Dylan Roof. She was arrested after taking two weapons to school and posting on Snapchat she hopes students protesting against gun violence in the nationwide walkout get shot. Apples, trees, blah blah blah.
If I'm old enough to get shot, I'm old enough to say I don't want to get shot.
Yeah, she's also a student. She's 18. She showed up at AC Flora High School in South Carolina with a knife, pepper spray, and marijuana. She faces weapons and drug charges. Judge released her on $5,000 bond, but ordered her to stay away from her school.
Why you even give her a bond?
Though she faced no charges related to her Snapchat post, it did cause alarm. In her post, she wrote, you walking out for a loud time of 17 minutes. They are letting you do this. Nothing is gonna change. What the fuck you think it's gonna do? I hope it's a trap and y'all get shot. We know it's fixing to be nothing but black people walking out anyway. No offense, of course, but, well, no offense taken. I mean, why would I be offended by?
You know, some areas it was nothing but white students that were walked out too, like, you know,
Dylan children Roof, of Dylan, all. Dylan Roof's sister, Karen. Dylan Roof's sister. Morgan Roof. Dylan Roof's sister. Morgan Roof. Dylan Roof, the man who shot up a Charleston church. So I don't know if we're gonna find the most consistent logic in her in her comments.
News here in this trial, essentially.
I didn't even mean to play that. Yeah, I don't know if we're gonna find the most, you know, consistent critical thinking skills in the Roof gene pool. So I don't know what she said. Only black people? I don't think we'll ever know.
That's racist.
Oh wait, that's why.
Right, is racist.
There you go. I think we got to the bottom of that mystery, Ken. A lot of people was upset that those kids would not want to get shot. It's still interesting that kids are the only people that really were motivated to walk out.
Yeah, because most adults aren't afraid of getting shot at fucking school because we don't go to school.
I'm not just but school shooting, but these shootings happen everywhere.
Oh, they do. They
happen at churches. They happen at workplaces. They happen do. At
but stores. But y'all think adults are stupid. So adults are like, they're focusing on the school, even though adults fucking shot at their jobs. They can get shot anywhere. But as far as they're concerned, they feel like they're safe when they're really not safe. You can get shot anywhere. It's a gun problem, not a school problem. But people try to divert the problem and act like, well, it's a school problem. And why should I care? Because I'm not in school, because there's dumb adults out there.
Well, I think it's honestly because we've decided that children's lives are the only lives that we should have a conversation about sacrificing for the gun love that we have in our culture. But one of the things that's interesting, it's not like we can agree that, well, I guess we have to talk about it if innocent kids get shot. You know, anybody else gets shot, no one wants to talk about it.
And I always got to get down to the root of the problem, innocent white children, you know, because if this was something where brown children were protesting across this country, you mm-hmm. would not get the same response. You wouldn't be talking about it. People wouldn't be on Capitol Hill. States wouldn't be changing and revamping their laws. If they did, they would clamp down tighter versus actually try to work with these students.
So you think that it's only because the right kids got shot?
Come at me,
Karen. Tell me the truth.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Even though children are upset, but white children are upset. And when white children get upset, just like their white parents, their privilege kicks in and everybody pays them attention.
Come at me.
So you think it's because if it was shot up like a black school, like if it was Eastside High, you think they'd be out there marching and we'd be on CNN interviewing the kids?
Mm-mm, they wouldn't care. They would just put the school on lockdown.
I think they would interview the kids. And they say, when are y'all gonna forgive the person that shot up your school?
Mm-hmm. that would be the very next question. Do you forgive?
When are you gonna forgive the key person that shot up your school?
And then they killed your friends. When are you gonna forgive them?
Right. I noticed you look a little upset that you just lost your family member. Can you just, I don't know, on a scale of 1 to 10, tell me how much you forgive the person that did this already? 2020 census will ask black people about their exact origins. Which means on the 2020 census, I will be putting down Wakanda. The 2020 census for the U.S. Census Bureau is changing how it will ask black people to designate their race. Under the checkbox for black or African American, the Bureau is adding a new space on the census questionnaire for participants to write in their non-Hispanic origins. According to a recent memo from the head of the 2020 census, African American, Jamaican, and Nigerian are listed as examples of origins on a questionnaire the Bureau is testing for 2020.
We'll see if we get to 2020 on this, because that's liable to get erased. Mm-hmm. With the government we have right now, they're gonna be like, nope, they're all black.
I don't know, I'd be scared. You put down one of those specific locations and that's what Trump's shipping you to.
Come on,
you know, Jamaican, get them out. The change means that many black people in the U.S. may have to take a closer look at their family trees to answer what can be a thorny question. Where are you really from? While many black immigrants can cite to a specific country, that question can is difficult, if not impossible, for many U.S. born African Americans to answer.
Hello. And that's my biggest thing. Mm-hmm. A boat. That's all I can tell you. A boat. Where? I don't know. It was a boat. Goddamn.
Come
it.
At me.
Mm-hmm. Come at me, Karen. Bring it.
It was a boat. That's mm-hmm. That's all. Like I came, my ancestors came across some water.
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
My favorite.
I do, and that's why I can't tell you my history.
I'm playing Wakanda, so y'all do what y'all want to do, and I feel like I won't be alone in this. I'm putting
no,
Wakanda.
You won't. Mm-mm. I've seen other people.
I'm writing Wakanda right on in there and being like, "Thank you, me and Sterling K. Brown. Call me Njobu now. That's what we doing." A teacher apologized for accidentally firing a gun in the classroom. I'm not gonna read it, but mm-hmm. just, you know, the same mm-hmm. thing I always say, but give the teachers guns, right? They can't even, it was a gun safety class, by the way. A nigga shot right in the ceiling.
A gun safety class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. An Alabama sheriff took $750,000 meant to feed inmates and bought himself a beach house.
I believe that. We're gonna go fuck about the prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Give a goddamn about them brown people and the few white people in there. I don't give a damn about them.
I mean, I can't lie, I definitely respect the hustle, you know. I mean, that's a lot of caucasity to
come on and not think you're gonna get caught. That's a lot of money to go fucking missing and nobody knows where it goes,
right? You just took the funds dedicated to
you didn't even spend some of it, so you can be like, well, I spent some, the other was overhead. I mean, you didn't have your store. You're like, nope, all the money gone,
right? I'm like, I mean, I can't really blame them. I mean, what good is it gonna do inmates for me to not be having a beach house? You know what I'm saying? It's really for them. I come back to prison all relaxed, looking good,
but I popped flavor and I dripped salt.
Yes.
Popping flavor, dripping sauce all over everybody at the prison, you know. Yeah, apparently a sheriff in Alabama took home a personal profit of more than $750,000 that was budgeted to feed jail inmates, and then purchased a $740,000 beach house. So he left $10,000 over. So look, everybody gets, we go to the dollar store, everybody pick one thing.
Everybody get a grain of rice.
It's perfectly legal in Alabama according to state law and local officials. Alabama has a depression era law that allows sheriffs to keep and retain unspent money from jail food provision accounts.
Why is this a law?
Sheriffs across the state take excess money as personal income, and in the event of a shortfall are personally liable for covering the gap. Oh, I know them niggas is barely eating.
Why is this a law?
I know every meal is Ramen's Pride up in that piece. Cause I know y'all, I'm so hungry, man. I would really love a sandwich. Well, I would really love beachfront property. So what we're gonna have to do is you're gonna keep eating this Ramen's Pride every morning and call it a day.
That's white supremacy through the fullest. You should not be able to do that bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
You
gotta capitalize and capitalism,
right? You get to take it as your own fucking personal income. How, Sway? How?
Right. I know they buy all they shit in bulk. Go down to Sam's Club, get the inmates some cans of food. No, they gonna eat the cans. Fuck that. That's coming out of my beach
right.
house money.
They probably get paid. I mean, they probably eat once a month like the paychecks.
Mm-hmm. So, yep. And it's already wrote into the law.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This motherfucker ass law to go all the way back to slavery.
How many times do they have a shortfall is my question.
A lot, and they don't make them cover the difference.
Today in Alabama, sheriffs are personally responsible for feeding inmates in their jails, and they receive funds to cover the cost. For state inmates, it's less than $2 per inmate per day. For the county, city, or federal inmates, the amount can be higher. If sheriffs feed inmates on less than that, they can keep and retain whatever is left over. They are feeding them less than $2 a day worth of food.
Ooh, that's no food.
What does that mean?
Right.
What is even less than $2 a day worth of food?
Come on.
What the fuck is a meal?
A bean.
Right? I think if the inmates were not being fed properly, it might be a concern, he said, but I'll guarantee you that if they're not fed properly, the federal government would let us know about it. Oh, would they?
Right.
The government that you run? Yeah. So, yep. All right. They keep it.
Right. And then you have a lot of people, including black people, to feel like everybody that goes to jail, they just want to write them off the books, act like they're non-existent, act like they don't got family and loved ones that care about them, and then these systems being mistreated regardless of if they committed the crimes or not. You don't do people like this.
I agree. As always, comes back to the same point.
So that's all it is. This is a modern day form of slavery. Slavery revamps itself. People want to act like slavery done gone away. No, nigga, you get into the jail system, all your rights are stripped. Your right to vote, your right to do a lot of shit is stripped away. At your right to work, because you know you put it on the system. If you've committed a certain type of crimes, you can't get no job, which means you can't make no money, which is a cycle to keep you in the system.
Mm-hmm. In 2009, then Sheriff Greg Bartlett of Morgan County was briefly tossed in jail after acknowledging that he had personally profited to the tune of $212,000 for a surplus in the jail food account. Prisoners testified about receiving meager meals. To cut corners, Bartlett used charitable donations and special deals, as CBS put it, including once splitting a $1,000 truck full of corn dogs with a sheriff of a nearby county and then feeding the inmates corn dogs twice a day for weeks. He defended himself by noting that his profit was legal under the state law, but an exasperated federal judge said the sheriff had an obligation to feed his inmates adequate food. The story made national headlines, and Bartlett agreed to no longer dip into the jail food fund. Didn't say he was fired, briefly jailed, and he agreed not to dip into the fund no more.
You feeding them corn dogs twice a day, dog?
Yeah, because he bought it off a truck and split it with another sheriff.
That's what I'm saying, you split it!
In 2015, the sheriff in Morgan County loaned $150,000 from the inmate food fund to a corrupt car lot. The loan was revealed when the business facing theft and scam charges went bankrupt. Again, that sheriff's use of the food money was legal under the state law. It was only prohibited in Morgan County because of the county's particular history. Aside from individual lawsuits like those, it's hard to tell exactly how much money earmarked for inmate food is going to sheriffs.
A lot.
This January, two advocacy groups sued for access to the records that could reveal how much jail food money was being turned into personal profit. The group said 49 sheriffs had refused to provide records or where funds were spent. Then in February, reporter Connor Sheets of the News began revealing Entrekin's spending history and his ethics disclosure. Yep. That's what happens. You privatize the shit. And we still run it like a business, almost like a CEO. Well, you cut costs, you can keep all the profit. Well, a sheriff and a CEO shouldn't operate the same way. You know, we have a responsibility as a society to rehabilitate people, to incarcerate people, not just for the safety, quote unquote, of the people outside, but for their rehabilitation and their livelihoods inside. And if we just turn jail into like, debtors prisons and businesses basically, like it has been turned into, this is what happens. You have laws literally written that, hey, feed them the least amount possible and you can keep the profit.
Right. Like I said, maybe it's my ignorance. I cannot believe this bullshit is written into the laws.
Right. The Senate just quietly passed the biggest rollback of Wall Street regulation since the financial crisis.
No shit. I didn't know this, but I'm saying no shit because a lot of people, I know we talked about this. Me and Roger until like last week, still balanced my checkbook by hand. And so I asked you for a check register. I asked Roger for a check register, and he was saying he does his check registry electronic now. So now I do mine electronic. And because I'm of the pre-Obama era laws where the banks could fine you and fee you for every little thing, that shit is coming back. They're getting ready to bring a lot of shit back that actually tank the economy. All that shit's going to come back. These laws are there for a reason. These laws are there for consumer protection, and they're stripping away consumer's protection. They're stripping away your right to sue. They're stripping away your right for class action lawsuits. And nobody's asking why. They're doing this for a reason. They're doing this because they don't give a fuck about the general public. Only thing they give a fuck about is profits and business and companies making a profit. And this trickle down economics is some bullshit. Money travels up. This money just never travels down.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. We knew this was coming.
Right.
Republicans have wanted this for a long time.
It's the bullshit you voted for.
And it's funny because both sides are the same shit, completely ignored any regulations that were put on Wall Street after the financial crisis. Because we get very accustoming and very, entitled so quickly, you know, with Obama's, it was just like, excellence, that's what's supposed to happen, you know, that's the end of it. But yeah, I'm not surprised at all at you know, at this happening,
right, and
because this is what Republicans want, and this is what a man like Donald Trump is all about. No regulations, no you know, no actual what'd you call it, no responsibility, no you know, he has no moral code, and he, you know, him and his ilk would absolutely be like, this is what the world needs. We're gonna make the world better by stopping everything Obama did, regardless of whether it was good or bad,
and regardless of if the people want it, you know, because a lot of people are like, oh, this is some bullshit, and they go, we don't give a fuck. And this boils back to voting. People act like voting don't fucking matter. Voting matters, because a lot of these Senate and governors and House and Congress, people are voting in the office, and this is the bullshit that they're doing.
Despite pushback from Warren and other Democrats, the bill easily passed by a vote of 67-31.
Right. So it's probably passed completely on party lines.
Yeah. The bill will increase risk in the financial system and possibly set the industry up for another devastating crisis.
Right.
A slew of moderate Democrats, particularly those running for re-election this year in states President Donald Trump won in 2016, jumped on board to get the measure through the chamber. So you still got those blue dog Democrats. You know, this is that thing where I tell people, we don't live in this. Your social media might be one thing. Your city even might be one thing. This country is not some liberal fucking country. You know, these Democrats running in fucking, you know, these states where they're scared that Trump, you know, that it's gonna go to Trump again, they don't have the fucking political confidence to be like, no, I'm gonna go full blue, I'm gonna go liberal, progressive, everything. They don't have it because, honestly, the people don't have it. Like, we talk a good game on Twitter and social media, but what the fuck are you doing in the voting booth? The fuck are you doing on the ground? You know what I mean? Like, what point, what reason does a guy who barely got elected over the Republican in your state have to come out and be like, well, actually, I'm the most progressive of all progressive ass people? What reason are we giving them? I don't see a reason. Like, I saw Bill Maher did another one that was like, Democrats don't have the balls to do this, that, and the other. I said, America don't have the balls to do that. Because, you know, there are Democrats who do talk a good game like that, but they're all in cities and states where they feel like that people have their back.
Correct.
That's why people talk like that. You know, that's why you have politicians that come from like super black districts be the main ones to be like, nah, fuck that shit. You know, but if they was in the middle of bumfuck Ohio, they'd be like, yeah, I don't know, man. I hope, I mean, I don't want to, you know, that's how it happens. So, you know, it's like, it's easy to be progressive online and shit, but these were the cost of the purity politics, the cost of,
both sides are equal.
Right, both sides are the same coin. And most importantly, it was the cost of Obama just being a black man. White people just could not handle that kind of adjustment to the system. I saw another article this morning. I'm not going to read on the show, but it was, what about the white people that feel left behind? And it was a white girl standing in front of a Confederate flag. And I said, how many of these are we going to write?
Right, we've been writing this since the motherfucker got elected. What are we talking about here?
How many of these do we have to write, guys? I just don't see why. Neil deGrasse Tyson said the existence of flat earthers proves America's schools have failed. In his recent Star Talk video, the astrophysicist explained he's had to live through scientific opinions of rapper B.O.B. and NBA star Kyrie Irving, both of whom think the Earth is flat. Never mind the thousands of photos that exist of a spherical planet or the thousands of scientists who have studied the Earth for over 2,500 years. They know better. So he set out on a crusade to explain the obvious. The Earth is still a giant blue pancake floating randomly isn't a giant blue pancake floating randomly like a lost game of frisbee golf in the universe. But when it came to explaining to the doubters why this is obvious, Tyson seemed a bit miffed. We have videos from space of the rotating spherical Earth, he told Chuck Nice in a video. What's interesting, according to Tyson, is that people who believe the Earth is flat believe other planets and the moon are round. Trying to make it simple so flat earthers can understand, Tyson walked through the shadows cast on the Earth during a lunar eclipse. They're never straight, they're curved. An even more simple explanation is that if Nice kept walking all the way around the Earth, he'd end up where he began, but from the west. Yet, no matter how simply Tyson attempted to explain the proof, there will always be some that call it an unproved theory. For me, the fact that there's a rise of flat earthers is evidence of two things. One, we live in a country that protects free speech. His second point, however, was far more bleak. We live in a country with a failed educational system. Our system needs to train you not only what to know, but how to think about information, knowledge, and evidence.
Our system, the school educational system we have here in America, in my opinion, was never designed to actually teach people to think. They were designed to actually prepare you for the workforce. The system is designed to follow the rules. Follow the rules. You do what your teacher tell you to do. You do what your principal tell you to do. You follow the rules. And after this, you go into the workplace and you follow the rules. You don't buck against the system. You do as you're told. And a lot of adults have bought into that system. So the system itself was automatically set up on failure because the system was designed to push you into the workforce.
Yep. And it's just interesting because people that go to school that know these shits, this is one of the other scary parts of the internet. It's allowed people to be in a circle where they can feel like it's all a conspiracy. Same way they feel about school shootings, all the shit. Like, it's a conspiracy to make us think the Earth is round. To what fucking game? You know what I mean? Why would, and everyone's in on it? Like, whatever, man. It's just wild. And it's also that thing too where stupid people, for the most part, think because we treat smartness as if it's a thing that is, one, not achievable by everybody, and rare, right? That's how we treat being smart. Like, oh, you're smart because you saw this a different way, right? It's I would say in most movies and fictional stuff, that's how we've traditionally treated smartness, is you're smart because you're in a higher echelon of other people. When we measure a test, the highest percentage of people will get this grade on the test, and that makes them smart. IQ test is this only small percentage of people that have high IQs and shit. So then we go, well, obviously being smart means being in a small group of people, right? Well, that's also what being contrarian is. And a lot of people who I think a lot of people associate being contrarian with being smart. Hey, I think the Earth is flat. Well, it's not, and we have scientific evidence to prove it's not. Well, that's because you're stupid and you're a sheep and I'm smart. You know, I think going back an article, I think that's a lot of what happened with the 2016 election. There was a small group of people that went, I'm smart because I think all candidates are trash. And we're like, they're all trash. Sure. They're not all equal trash. Right. Some are more dangerous than others.
Come on.
Well, I'm so smart. I think the one that's the most safe is the most dangerous. Okay, well, that's actually not smart. That's more contrarian than smart. Well, I'm so smart that I think the dude that's the worst possible candidate is the best possible candidate. Okay, you're now just being so contrarian to feel smugly superior to everyone, and you've convinced yourself how you're the only one that's got it figured out, and you're fucking it up for everyone.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of how I think it happens with stuff, even stuff like science, like flat earth and climate change and shit like that. People are like, well, I'm in a small group of people that thinks 98% of fucking scientists are stupid. And you're like, no, you're just in a big group of people that are stupid. Like, you're one of the stupid people. You don't get to just be like, I did no research, or I Googled something, or I hit a Reddit thread, and now the Earth is fucking flat, and climate change is fake, and we have unlimited supply of fossil fuels, and, you know, it's like, what is wrong with you? you know, it's extended to science. You know, I don't see this any different.
Very dangerous.
I don't see this any different than the people that, you know, watch Fox News and think it's just different alternative facts, you know? The same shit. A prominent American hate group collapsed because of an affair.
Shit now.
What? Who knew love would be the thing to destroy hate? The trailer
park. History would tell you otherwise. Yes, it will. History would tell you, yeah.
That was out here fighting over love.
And I, you know, I'm assuming most of these hate groups are probably straight, so it probably was over a woman.
Love and hip group, love and hate groups.
Come on, love and hate groups.
Let's see what was going on with this Alabaster Amore. It seems that one of the leaders of the Traditionalist Worker Party left the group after fellow hate group leader Matthew Hombach allegedly slept with his wife. Damn. If that ain't some shit.
So we gonna let this hate come between us? We gonna let the hate among our brothers and sisters come between our hate for them other people?
The trailer park brawl led spokesperson Matt.
Trailer park brawl.
Where else would it happen?
Right? I'm about to say that's just straight stereotyping right there.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like the best place for it to happen, to be honest.
Come on.
The trailer park brawl led spokesperson Matt Parrott to delete the neo-Nazi party's membership list as well as its website. There's no more party, ma'am, he told a reporter to the Daily Beast.
Oh shit, he's like, fuck it, delete it all.
This headline has been updated to reflect the development. Okay. Matthew Hombach, the chief of the Traditionalist Worker Party and one of the most prominent leaders of the American white nationalist movement, was arrested on Tuesday for allegedly attacking both his wife, Brooke Hombach, and her stepfather, fellow party leader Matt Parrott.
What? Her stepfather.
I wonder why he attacked him. According to a police report.
Probably because he knew.
According to a police report obtained by Southern Poverty Law Center, the bizarre events leading to his arrest stem from a trick gone awry. Apparently, Hombach and Parrott's wife, Jessica, had an affair that lasted 3 months. But Hombach's wife reportedly wanted to see if her husband would continue to fling despite having said it was over. On Tuesday, Matt Parrott and Brooke Hombach reportedly stood on a cardboard box outside a trailer home and spied on their significant others from the window.
Damn. Oh, so him and the wife got together to spy on the other two.
Mm-hmm. A cardboard box.
How strong with this goddamn cardboard box?
Outside a trailer home.
You think you don't get spotted standing on a cardboard box?
To watch her get in his box. I mean, him get in her box.
Apparently so.
Outside the box. According to at least one account of the report, the two began to have sex, and Parrott went inside to confront Hombach. Parrott said he poked Hombach in the chest, and then Hombach allegedly choked him out and caused him to lose consciousness. So he ran up in there on some, the things I had to prove for my love, and got his ass choked the fuck out by the dude that was fucking his wife.
Yep.
Boy, if that ain't a cuck, on cuck crime. When he came to, Parrott took his younger stepdaughter to a Walmart and called the cops, telling them that Hombach's wife may have taken a recording of the encounter. Meanwhile, Hombach allegedly attacked his wife, Brooke, grabbed her face, throwing her onto the bed. He was carted off to the Orange County jail in handcuffs. So he got caught cheating and he beat up two people. When the police arrived, all four people involved in the incident listed some variation of white nationalists as their occupation and statements. What you do for a living? Hate niggers. All right, just write that down right here. For years, Hombach, how's business going? Oh, great lately. I mean, since 2016.
I mean, it's been up 200% since Trump got in office.
For years, Hombach had been trying to build a coalition of American white nationalists and make their ideas more acceptable in the mainstream discourse. He became famous for starting a white student union at Towson University and was called the affable, youthful face of hate in America. After he pushed a Black Lives Matter protest at a Trump rally and got sued, he continued to drift even more to the right and was a presence at the Unite the Right in Charlottesville. Most recently, he was set to speak alongside Richard Spencer in Michigan State event that descended into a clash between racists and protesters. So he was on the come up. I mean, look, your woman see a man that's about something, you know. getting his life together, out here speaking engagements, pushing people in the face on TV. How's she supposed to turn that down?
I mean, his hate's stronger than yours, apparently.
You know, how she supposed to not go after that BWC? I don't think so.
Duh!
Hombach is now free on bond, but all is not well for the white nationalist, Paoli, Indiana. I'm done. I'm out, Parrott apparently told the hate group tracker. SPLC has won. Matt Parrott is out the gang. Y'all have a nice life. So he gone.
Just crank up another group somewhere else.
Bye, Matt Parrott.
It's a lot of white folks out there that embrace him, and he can be a star in their group.
I don't know. I got to question his commitment to hating niggas.
I guess he ain't gonna let that much.
You gonna let your wife fucking another dude stop you from being a hate monger?
No, I don't think he will.
You know, I'm sure when he walked up in there and got choked the fuck out, he was quite upset. Yeah,
hey, yo, Ren, yo, what's up, yo, 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 Big C told me you was at the club, pushing up on one of my hoes,
yo, yo, yo,
yo, yo, Lana,
yeah, yo, Lana,
man, that hoe is a hoe,
yo, yo,
man, you still mess with that,
she may be a hoe, but she's my hoe, you know,
the hoe is mine,
you gotta get her,
yeah, that hoe was his, Karen. And can't believe he let little thing, like little white on white affair, stop everything.
Apparently it will.
You know, I like that he got choked out though. That's my favorite part.
Running up in there, didn't know what you were dealing with.
And what was his daughter doing in there? What was she, what, like they was fucking with the daughter in the house?
Probably
like,
was the baby probably in another room not paying no attention.
Savages. That is so sad to see white supremacists come down like that on each other. You know, like I wonder if that's the white supremacist version of whenever we see Black Lives Matter activists fighting on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You know, I will be like, oh damn, so and so fell out with so and so. Like, I was rooting for both of them. Why can't we all get along? I wonder if white people were sitting around like that too. And yes, I'm roboting on purpose. Okay, guys, deal with it. I like roboting. But yeah, I wonder if that's how they was feeling, that pressure. Mm-hmm. Come on, guys, can't we just get along?
Mm-mm.
Come on. Why we gotta be like this? You setting a bad example for the other hate mongers and racists. You setting, what about the children that are hate mongers and racists? They gonna see y'all fighting, okay? The kids are seeing this. We need to get our hate together.
I know. We fighting amongst ourselves. Of course the niggas gonna divide us.
What about the crackers in Chicago, huh?
What about the crackers in Wisconsin?
Mm-hmm. That's sad. Mm-mm-mm. Sad when you see it happen like that.
Mm-hmm.
Racist hating racist. Mm-mm-mm. Should have just had an alt-right threesome.
It ended better.
All right, let's go to
somebody might have been choked out, but not like he was.
Consensual choking.
Right.
You know? All right, let's go to fucking with black people.
We're just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people.
That's right, guys. Time to play the game that we all hate to play. It's fucking with black people. The game, we go all around the globe. We find different articles to make us a fuck with, and we assign point scores from 0 to 100, intervals of 25. Today's contestants, everybody. All right, let's see who's fucking with us now. An Ohio firefighter has gotten fired after sharing a racist McDonald's meme on Facebook. Springfield, Ohio firefighter won't be putting out any fires anytime soon.
Uh-oh.
After being fired for sharing a racist meme on Facebook, according to the Springfield News Sun, Bradley Ball, who was hired less than 2 months ago, shared a meme that used a racial slur directed towards black people and mocked fast food workers and high school dropouts. He shared a meme that said, "Niggas drop out of school and get a job at McDonald's talking about on my grind. Yeah, okay. Grind me up a Oreo McFlurry with your dumb ass."
I don't think Ronald McDonald would approve this message.
I don't know. That's probably how Ronald talked to him.
I hope not.
When he's not on camera. Springfield City Manager Jim Bodemiller notified Ball that the post wasn't sensitive and that was the reason he was terminated.
Not racist.
He was officially fired March 9th and should probably check to see if McDonald's is hiring. That was just petty, and that was our girl Aisha that wrote that. Yeah, I mean, 0 to 100, Karen.
I guess 75.
75? Okay. 0. Not fuck with it all, guys. I mean, not by his firing necessarily, you know. I'm not saying he should have been fired. And obviously it was very insensitive to dropouts and whatnot to share that meme. But I think this is a classic case of a black person joke getting shared on a white person's wall. And that's the whole thing. Like if it was if a black person shared that joke, I would just laugh. Like y'all niggas be tripping. Like I'll say it was, I mean, I don't agree with the joke, but mm-hmm. it's a joke. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to agree with your fucking joke. It's a joke. But, yeah, a white person sharing it. Nah, man, you can't be sharing nigga on your wall. Only we could get to say it.
Come on.
Even though y'all invented the word.
Deal with it.
This is our reparations. Racism victim suspended by a university because her abuser feels intimidated. Mm-hmm. The victim says the university are making black students out to be aggressive. A university student has been suspended by De Montfort University after she reported an incident of a racist abuse as the abuser now feels scared and intimidated.
100.
Angry black woman. Elizabeth Sawyer was invited out by course mates who sang the racist nursery rhyme "Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Mo," including the line "Catch a nigger by its toe." She said one of the students later called her a nigger to her face on campus. Elizabeth shared her story of being abused online, calling out her university for their lack of action against the abuser, to which the university responded by insisting that they were taking allegations extremely seriously and would take immediate and appropriate action. But a month after the incident, Elizabeth told the university newspaper, The Demon, that De Montfort had suspended her. She said she had received a letter from the university revealing a complaint that she had used abusive and offensive language towards the course mate and that pending an investigation into the incident, she would be suspended from campus. The university has suspended me because the two white, racist white girls feel scared and intimidated by seeing me, so now they are making sure the black students are not going to retaliate, so I have been suspended until further notice. I'm so angry because if I wanted to threaten them a fight, I would have fought since February. They are making the black students look aggressive. With that is not the case at all. Addressing the social media outcry against the university action, the spokesperson for the university said, "We completely understand people's concerns regarding what's been posted on Twitter since last night about the suspension of one of our students. It is an extremely sensitive issue. There are a number of aspects which need to be explored." I gotta give that one 100, dog.
Oh yeah, I just said 100 because this makes me angry.
Yeah, that's that whole like, you're the real racist for noticing shit was racist and being upset by racism. So you gotta go. You gotta get off campus because we don't know what you're gonna do. I mean, you're liable to get called nigger and have an attitude about it, and we can't have that on our campus. Like that. at least that's how I read it. It's funny because she didn't threaten them, and then I guarantee they weren't kicked off campus for the quote unquote investigation that never happened.
Right. But bitch, you scared of me? Like she said, if I wanted to put these hands on you, I'd have put these hands on you a while ago. I'd have put these hands on you when you initially said something to my face, but it didn't. So I'm not a threat. In fact, I'm the one that's actually scared here. Mm-hmm. But the university doesn't see it like that.
Right. So that was obvious
that's a sense of right from wrong. They know it's wrong to steal and burn down a CVS and an old person's home. I mean, come on.
come on. So calling them thugs, just call them niggers.
Joe's Crab Shack, sorry for controversial picture.
They still around? The ones around here closed.
Well, maybe this is why. This is in Roseville, Roseville, Minnesota. A Roseville restaurant is under fire for an image found on a dining table depicting a hanging. Yep. The Minneapolis NAACP says Tyrone Williams and Chantel Allen, guess the race, were preparing to dine at Joe's Crab Shack Wednesday night when they noticed a photo embedded inside of the tabletop. The image appears to show a large group of white people watching the public execution of at least one black person. Perfect dining accoutrement, as I would say. You ever just be hungry and you like, you know what this decor could use in here? A lynching of a black person.
At the Crab Shack.
At the Crab Shack. Whoa. At the Crab Shack, y'all.
Yeah, because the thing is, when the Joe's Crab Shack was here, and you would go and they would be busy, they would do bullshit like dance around and shit like that to waste time for 15 minutes to get the cooks at to get the kitchens actually time to catch up, you know, little bullshit like that. The drinks were good, but you know, it was like the food was all right for me to watch you fucking dance while I'm hungry.
Why does this turn into a Yelp review? That has nothing to do with this article.
Oh,
what's going on over there?
You went from, I went from that to fuck them. I don't want to have to sit there and watch you dance and turn around and look down at my table and see a nigga getting hung. No.
3 stars. Okay. The dance is terrible. The food takes too long. Just hurry up. Right. And the drinks were good.
Right. And now I got to turn around and see a nigga getting hanged, sketched on my table. I am highly upset. May I speak to a manager?
Speaking of crabs, you're nothing but a crab in the barrel for that one. What about all the black people working at Joe Crab Shack?
What about them?
Yeah, that's pretty bad. On the bottom of the picture, it reads, hanging at Groesbeck, Texas, April 12, 1895. At the top, it says, all I said was that I didn't like the gumbo. So it's a joke.
This after customers at the Roseville location complained that the picture.
What the fuck? Well, it was playing the article and now it's not. I don't know what I'm supposed to do now. All right. Well, I'll try to talk and see if it catches up. But yeah, on the bottom of the picture. Oh, yeah. So Williams said the pair immediately waved down a manager, although the manager was apologetic about the lynching.
Is racist. Carol Evans J. Olsen is live in Roseville.
What the fuck? Let me just turn the volume off. Although the manager was apologetic about the lynching depiction, that does not change the fact that the sickening image of black men being lynched was intentionally embedded inside of the table. That type of blatant racism should not be tolerated in this country.
Probably been there for years and nobody said nothing.
Or in our local and national eating establishments. I felt so sick to my stomach and stressed out since seeing the image on the table where I was planning to eat my food. Well, you know what it makes me think? A white person designed and bought that table.
Of course.
I feel like this is not the first story we've covered of something similar to this. Right. I will guarantee you that however that table was produced, a white person thought it was funny, and they didn't see, to them they just went, it doesn't matter what race of the person is getting lynched. It's the joke is someone getting lynched because they didn't like the gumbo. Ha ha ha. Isn't that funny? No. You can't take that picture and make it funny to everybody. You know, and your job is to serve me food, not to be funny.
Come on, I didn't come here for the jokes. I came in for the crab.
Nobody's ever walked out and said, thank God for that table. You know what I mean? Boy, the food was terrible, but woo, was that table funny? Let's do another segment. Let's move on. That's enough fucking with black people today.
Come on. Mm-hmm. Just started out fucking with me at the first story.
Just barely. That was barely fucking. let's see. Well, you know what? We haven't done this in a while. Let's try to take out the trash, guys. See what's going on in this news. Find the trash.
Thank you.
Anti-child bride bill stalls in Kentucky where girls age 13 can marry. A bill outlawing child marriage in Kentucky has stalled in the state Senate Judiciary Committee after last-minute opposition from a conservative group. The bill was proposed by Republican State Senator Julie Rock Adams and bans marriage under the age of 17, with those seeking to marry at that age requiring a judge's approval. Under current law, a girl of any age can marry as long as she's pregnant and wedding the expectant father.
Right, and that's such a fucked up law. That law is so fucked up. I forgot what state it was in, but a black lady, she actually got the laws changed in her state. I forgot what state this is, please forgive me. And she was a black lady, and she ended up getting abused by, like, I think I want to say like a deacon in church. She ended up being abused at like 9, having like a child at 10, and then was forced to be married because her parents actually signed an agreement. She was forced to get married. She ended up having 5 more children because of that in Florida. And she ended up fighting in the state and was like, hey, no child should be forced to do this bullshit. And I think they made it 17, up to 16. I think 17, you can get married. I think the person has to be like 1 or 2 years older than you or something like that. So your parents can't force you into marrying somebody, because she said her having the child is one thing, but she don't think she would have been forced into such a horrible marriage with this person, because the person who raped her, she ended up having to be married to. And everybody act like every time a young lady gets pregnant, it's always with a little boyfriend or something like that. No, it can sometimes be your rapist and your abuser too.
Under the current law, a girl of any age can marry as long as she's pregnant and wedding the expectant father. Teens under the age of 16 or 17 can marry with parental permission. According to women's rights advocacy group, the Terra Justice Center, Kentucky has the third highest number of child marriages in the U.S. behind Texas and Florida, with 11,000 children married in the state between 2000 and 2017. Last August, they found, an investigation found minors as young as 13 had been married.
And a lot of times they're marrying these old fucking ass men. Every now and then it be children marrying, you know, children their own age, but most of the time it be these old ass men.
So disappointed, wrote Adams, after learning that the bill would not go to vote Friday. My SB 48 outlaw child marriage won't be called for a vote. It is disgusting that lobbying organizations would embrace kids marrying adults. We see evidence of parents who are addicted, abusive, neglectful, pushing their children into predatory arms. Appalling. Eileen Rechtenwald, the executive director of the Kentucky Association of Sexual Assault Programs, condemned the decision in a statement to the Courier Journal. This is legalized rape of a child. We right. cannot allow that to continue in Kentucky. And I cannot believe we are even debating this in the year 2018 in the United States. Among supporters of the bill is Donna Pollard, who was married at 16 to a much older man who had been sexually abusing her since the age of 14. She said she faced years of physical and psychological abuse in the marriage, which she was pushed into by her mother. I felt just completely and totally trapped, Pollard told the Journal in January. She now campaigns for reform in the state's marriage laws. Adams told the Insider that the bill stalled after pressure from the influential Family Foundation of Kentucky, a conservative lobbying group. Family Foundation spokesman Martin Cothran told the publication on Friday that we haven't done much lobbying at all against this bill, though they had expressed our concerns to the chairman of the committee and asked for a week to work this out. He said the group opposed the bill because it takes away parental rights at the very beginning and then includes them in a sort of incidental way at the end of the process. So look, if your parents want to sell or give away their 13-year-old daughter, I mean, who are me to judge? Basically, is his point. Here's the thing I would throw in. This kind of feels a little bit like how people who fight against abortion laws have to fight constantly at every level. So they're like, hey, we have to fight against people trying to redefine like what a term is for a baby. We have to fight against how many weeks, you know, when they try to put something like we want to put in a condition that you can't do it after this number of weeks, and we want to fight around that. And so they have to fight against that, just because at some point the ultimate goal of the people who are pushing for those laws is not to stop at, okay, we all agree, you know, 30 weeks is the limit. No, their goal is to be like, okay, now that we got 30, we want 28. Now we got 28, let's go to 22. Now to eventually where it's like, you can't have an abortion, period. You cannot choose to do that. I wonder if this is the opposite thing, but for child rape.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, well, if we fight on this at all, well, if we just let them do this, what's next? You know what I mean? Like, so
your child not being goddamn abused at 13 and 14 and 15 years old.
Cause like the religious freedom people and shit, I really feel, you know, in many cases, they're trying to just, a lot of it is about controlling women's bodies.
Right.
So this is a measure that gives up control of women's bodies, girls' bodies, female bodies early in life, you know, is as far as how they view it. I'm not saying all people with vaginas are female, blah, blah. I don't, you know, y'all get it. But a lot of this is about the perceived control of the bodies of females.
Mm-hmm.
So to them, they're like, yeah, the more that someone else has a chance to have a say over someone else's body, the better.
Right. And a lot of times these young ladies, they're not educated. They don't go to school. They end up spending a lot of their lives raising children.
If you have the kind of parents that will let you get married at 13, you also have the kind of parents that are probably letting you be stupid.
Correct.
Let's see, time's up, 60 days in. This was launched on the carpet, but was never intended to live on the carpet. The Workplace Equality Movement's Legal Defense Fund has so far raised $21 million and connected 1,250 people to legal resource. That's good. Time's Up may have started with the New Year's Day announcement signed by 300 Hollywood women, but its organizers want to make it clear that this campaign is much more expansive than many may have assumed. For one, it's not just about sexual harassment, although the tidal wave of public sexual misconduct allegations have served as the inciting incident for the movement. Time's Up, which is forming as a 501c social welfare organization, is about basic fairness in the workplace, said Bad Robot CEO Katie McGrath, who joined seven other Time's Up leaders to deliver a 60-day progress report to the press on Thursday. So yeah, they have been out here trying to do some actual work. You know, it's funny because every once in a while I see somebody throw shade at Time's Up or as a movement or whatever, as an organization trying to help people, and it always feels so counterproductive because it's like the alternative to this was nothing.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't even understand what the problem. If they're helping, they're helping. If they're getting, you know, and then low key, like, I didn't feel like fighting with this person on my page, but she like kind of like shitted on them because someone got like a man got an award at a thing, like I think Kobe got an award. She was like, so much for Time's Up. And I'm like, okay, I understand the hypocrisy, but Time's Up is not giving out these awards.
No, they're not.
They're not the Oscars.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? I don't think any of the people involved in Time's Up would have been like, yay Kobe, you know. And even still, you know, like I understand like the individual failings of some of the women involved may, you know, cause some sort of pushback to it. And I'm not here to defend it or not. I don't really care. But this movement is also helmed by and influenced by and controlled by, in a lot of ways, a lot of black and brown women, which is one of the reasons that their idea of justice this time sounds so less white feminism-y. Not saying that it's not some in there, but it sounds a lot less. It's a lot more like, well, we have means, we're not the ones who need to take this money and like defend each other. How do we align with women who work in the fields of crops, that get crops that have no actual legal defense fund and constantly talk about sexual harassment and rape and battery and stuff, and they have nobody that has their back? How do we transfer this money to them so they can defend themselves legally in the court of law? Ideas like that, no offense to white women, but they don't come from white women.
No, they don't.
You know what I mean? Ideas like that come from activists who've already been involved in this, which is one of the things that first things they did was go get activists that actually know what they're doing.
Yeah, and they've seen this over and over again. They kind of know how the system works against brown people and people of color. And,
so I'm a little
marginalized women.
Yeah, so I'm a little protective of some of the stuff with Time's Up because I don't want it coming from somebody being on some like dang shit, and I'll have to be like, well, I don't think y'all can really just shit on these black and brown women that are coming up with the ideas for this movement. I think you gotta step the fuck back, let them cook, and if you find the end results ain't shit, cool, but let's not blame them for hundreds of years and decades of an industry being fucked up and be like, y'all didn't fix it in 1 second, y'all whole movement is trash.
Correct. And also in a lot of the activist space, a lot of times is jealousy and envy. A lot of people, whenever the shit ain't them and they're not involved and they're not profiting from it and they're not getting the limelight, they immediately come out and shit on everything that's not centered around them.
To that end, Times Up is partnering with nonprofit StoryCorps to enable women to record their own stories about being on the job and upload them to the Library of Congress, where it will live forever as a narrative of working women and marking this moment. It's going to be astounding to have this archive and help demonstrate that workplace inequality is such a pervasive condition for women and for men. The partnership will launch Friday morning with a story from Ashley Judd, Jane Fonda, and America Ferrera that have also contributed their own tales. Time's Up also is not just about the entertainment industry, a point that's been repeatedly emphasized and was underlined at the Golden Globes when seven actresses escorted seven activists on the red carpet. The latter, who included Alianza, that's what I meant to say, Nacional de Campesinas, National Farmers Workers Women's Alliance is what it's called. Co-founder Monica Ramirez, Restaurant Opportunity Center United President Saru Jayaraman, and the National Domestic Workers Alliance Director Ijean Poo, who have all contributed to working closely with Time's Up in their respective sectors of expertise. The campaign strategy in expanding its reach to more industries is to identify an ally with activists already working for women's rights in those fields, said Ava DuVernay. 2 months into the Legal Defense Fund, they have fielded more than 1,700 requests for assistance from individuals working in more than 60 different industries. Just a small percentage hail from entertainment, said political consultant Hillary Rosen, adding, when we started the fund, we wanted to make sure that we prioritize the wage worker. There are clearly needs across the board, but priorities are given to workers in industries that are particularly vulnerable. Right.
Which probably means like the service industry, which is probably the number one industry because more women work in that industry than probably any other industry. And that's why they don't pay nobody in those industries.
Well, also, Me Too started getting the most attention because it started happening to prominent white actresses. So it's almost like they already have a recourse. They already have the We Believe Women people with them to some extent. Not saying that they don't have a hard path, because anybody that's a survivor of sexual assault and harassment immediately gets scrutinized in a way that, you know, other people don't.
Correct.
But on that scale of like things that are on your side, they have way more on their side than someone who's like, I'm a farm worker in Louisiana and maybe I'm in the country illegally or something, or maybe I'm in the country legally but I don't, you know, with DACA and all this shit getting challenged, I don't feel like going to, I can go to authorities and I'm making pennies on a dollar. Maybe I'm, you know, not on maybe the entire the entire thing that I'm doing is not necessarily documented in the most stringent way because the company's doing it off the books and paying me cash and shit like that.
Right.
Do I feel like if I get sexually assaulted, I can just tell Hollywood Reporter and they report on it?
No.
Is anyone gonna reach out to me and be like, we interviewed 10 women that were assaulted by this person that in this industry? Mm-hmm. No, but maybe now with this money and these resources, maybe I can get my day in court.
Correct.
The fund, which is housed at the National Women's Law Center, has so far raised $21 million from 20,000 donations, ranging between $5 to $2 million. Starting next week, lawyers will be able to apply online to the NWLC to request disbursements, although many of the 500-plus attorney volunteers are already offering their services pro bono. To date, 1,250 callers to the fund have been connected with legal resources. Although the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund will only be able to assist employees in the United States, the campaign has fielded inquiries about other countries, including Kenya, South Korea, Pakistan, Kuwait, and Mexico.
That's what I'm talking about.
Time's Up Entertainment is the base of how this all started, but we're becoming Time's Up Global, said Shonda Rhimes. Valentine's Day saw the launch of the UK-based Justice and Equality Fund with a £1 million pound donation from Emma Watson. That fund has since raised nearly an additional £600,000 in 2 weeks.
Right, because and not to crap on the white women, that shit also did brown people think about. Go, yeah, okay, it's good that we're doing it here, but y'all do know is other places that actually need this too, that we could actually do great work in these areas too. Let's look outside of the United States of America, and a lot of those places are brown.
And this is only after 60 days. Such projects have been born out of mutual inspiration and proactive initiative. The women who have been speaking on behalf of Time's Up want to clarify that it's never been an invitation-based organization. Hollywood breeds a feeling of exclusion for people, Shonda Rhimes said. There's this feeling that this must be something that you're invited to because everything else in this town is built on that idea. But this just doesn't work this way. If you want to join, you can make it happen wherever you are, she said. Said Laura Dern, who said that meetings formed while she was on location in Atlanta because a crew member suggested it. We've had questions about it. If there's de facto leadership here, and the truth is that it's just people who continue to show up and do the work, said Tessa Thompson. Because everyone in Time's Up also works a full-time day job, the campaign allows for fluid participation. I wasn't involved in the first month, DuVernay said. Literally after I got done with A Wrinkle in Time, I called attorney Nina Shaw and was like, is there a meeting? Although there is more architecture being put around a base group, it's a flexible leadership structure that allows people to come in and out, and not just in our industry. Despite that, the campaign has been able to draw 200 to 400 attendees to its monthly meetings, while its countless smaller working groups, which the group often refers to as spokes on a wheel, meet as frequently as needed on weekends and evenings throughout the month. It's also incredible, all these women doing this while already having full-time fucking jobs and being titans in their industry. And they're like, and in addition to this, because men won't do it after decades of men ignoring this and companies prioritizing these men first, it's really literally left up to the people who have been targeted
and affected by it, correct,
to be the activists that fix it. That's sad, but it's the truth. It wouldn't happen if it not for that.
It sure wouldn't happen. And the thing is, and like you say, it's funny that you say that, because like, you see a lot of women in the industry, but where are the men? They didn't say men couldn't join. They didn't say men aren't abused.
There even is a Time's Up Men, which had its first meeting at UCLA in mid-January. About 180 men, about three times more than the women expected, showed up to hear from gender studies sociologist Michael Kimmel and activist Ted Bunch, the chief development officer for A Call to Men, which works to prevent violence against women and girls. These convenings had not previously been publicized to the press, because although Time's Up started so splashy on the red carpet, there's real work being done, DuVernay said, adding that individuals may elect to wear pins on Oscar Sunday, but the movement is eager to move on from being seen as an award show protest group. The organizers acknowledge that they have worked with producers to create a Time's Up moment during the telecast, but that's just the surface of their efforts. This was launched on the carpet, but it was never intended to live on the carpet, said McGrath. A really on-the-nose presence might feel satisfying, but we want to make sure that as we move forward, we're being strategic and thoughtful and authentic in our activations and our rollout. 60 days in, we don't need to fit everything into it. It's more important to do it right.
Correct, and kudos to them. And also, a lot of people were shitting on them, like, all y'all doing out there is wearing pins, all y'all out there doing. A lot of people criticized them for that when, like I said, a lot of shit that they doing wasn't public yet.
Also, a lot of people just sounded really fucking stupid, bitter, jealous, and
yes,
and like some fucking haters, dog. I mean, that's the thing. You gotta, with a lot of shit, man, you just have to do your thing and let motherfuckers talk shit, because
come on,
it was a lot of people that was hating on that lane, but they went out and got a lot of activists that have like their credentials. They went out and let them come up with the ideas and lead. They went out and found titans in the industry that weren't just white women and said, hey, what are your ideas about this, and let them be spokespeople and lead on that shit. So it's like, it's that thing where they did things the way that people say they want it done,
right?
But they still didn't come call your black ass, so you mad, you know what I mean? I just had to ignore them people, because
me too,
there's a large part of shit of a lot of this stuff where I'm like, do people want justice or they just jealous? And when you look at things that way, a lot of times you can decipher the real from the fake. It's like, okay, you just mad you're not up on the stage, but why the fuck would you be mad at this movement? You clearly don't know shit yet. You don't have to answer to these questions. I'm just asking questions. I'm like, these are loaded questions to say that the movement ain't shit,
right?
And the shit on it. Okay, cool, got it. Well, you can't work with everybody, and you're just one of those people you can't work with. But a lot of people was coming at them sideways for trying to help, you know what I mean? And for not, and like I said, I saw people that was, oh, this was whack, and oh, so y'all bring out some activists, ain't nothing but just blackface on y'all white shit. And I'm like, okay, so then if they would have called you, you would have turned the call down?
Come on.
Or you would have put on your best dress and been the fuck out there front and center, like, finally I can get my profile raised and all the causes that I want to promote raised. I've been in a room with some people that got resources and reach to help me. You would have turned that down? No, the fuck you wouldn't. Don't lie to me.
And who's to say they won't do it again and ask another set of activists?
Right.
You don't know.
Right. So I don't know, man. I feel like a lot of the visibility of it is what people get jealous of, but sometimes the visibility is necessary to get the work done.
Correct.
You know what I mean? I think people see visibility and they covet it, and they think, well, obviously that's the part of it I want. I need to be seen. I want to be everywhere. But it's like, dog, the work happens behind the scenes.
Oh, come on now.
And them giving out the like progress report kind of thing answers a lot of questions that people were either being misled on or purposely trying to spread negativity about their movement and be like, it ain't do this, it ain't do that. And it's like, so you ain't attend no meetings, you don't know nobody in it, you don't got no reports, but you out here basically saying they ain't doing shit. And then when they do release something, it's crickets, it's quiet as fuck. So but shout out to the work that's being done though. That's amazing, because I'm sure if I was one of those 1,700 people that needed help and got that answer on that phone and got in touch, and 1,250 people or whatever that got in touch with legal resources,
right,
that I could not afford myself, I'm pretty sure I'd be thankful. But that's just me.
Right.
Let's see, who else is trash? Bamboo Rolling Papers heir is in hot water for allegedly sending around his wife's bikini pics.
And who is this?
Trash is who this is.
Okay, I believe you.
Is sending photos to overweight women of a shapely woman in a bikini a hate crime? I don't know if it's a hate crime. Larry Spielfogel, heir to the Bamboo Rolling Papers fortune, might find out. The Manhattanite, 67 years old, acting like this. That's right, 67 years old, acting like a fucking child. He allegedly sent swimwear photos of his much younger wife, Deborah Wisdom Spielfogel, or whatever, to clients at the Rice House Healthcare Program near Durham, North Carolina, with the message, hey bitches, no fat asses here with me. 2 years ago, he was banished from the program, a clinic that treats obesity and a variety of medical disorders, for bad behavior. At the same time, the Post has learned he was trolling female members with the photos, and it may get him in big trouble with the law. A source added that at the end of 2017, all the emails and texts were turned over to the FBI agents, who, and they were reviewing Larry's actions as possible hate crimes. Jerry Clayton, Spielfogel's lawyer, claims that he is not aware of any FBI investigation. However, after Spielfogel was asked to leave the Rice House in 2016. He was charged with stalking but didn't show up to his court dates. So an arrest warrant was issued in April. The warrant is still outstanding per the county court. Well, I guess he can't step foot back in North Carolina.
Come on.
Spielfogel was terrorizing my clients, Rice House owner John Acoth told me.
Right.
And once he was thrown out, he tried to destroy the program and me personally. Spielfogel's lawyer told a North Carolina court that his client has a heart condition and cannot travel. But Spielfogel posted reviews on Facebook of hotels and restaurants in France, Italy, Miami, and Las Vegas last year.
But he can't travel.
I like that he also had to review them. He was also
for Yelp.
He was also seen in the Hamptons riding his motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
He insist, Clayton insists at the time of the proceeding in North Carolina, Mr. Spielfogel was hospitalized with coronary disease. Mm-mm. Trash. What else could it be? It just felt very wrong. Sherman Alexie's accusers go on the record. Writer Sherman Alexie last week issued a statement admitting he has harmed others after rumors and allegations began to circulate about sexual harassment. Without providing details, Alexie said, "There are women telling the truth," and he apologized to the people he has hurt. Now some of these women have come forward to speak to NPR about their experiences with him. Alexie may not be a household name, but he is one of the country's best known Native American poets and writers with a charismatic personality and a large following. He won the National Book Award in 2007 for his young adult novel, The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian. And he wrote the screenplay for the film Smoke Signals, based on one of his stories. So the news about him has rocked the world of both the Native American and children's literature. In those circles, well, he's a rock star, says children book author Ann Ursu. After the Harvey Weinstein sexual assault story broke, Ursu decided to survey women in the children's book business to see if they had experienced such problems, just as many media companies, including NPR, have. Ursu's story, which she published in February on the website Medium, contributed to the whisper of sexual scandal that was already building around some well-known authors, including Ursu says some of the most popular kids book writers use the power that celebrities seduce women. There really is nothing that we as men won't get a little bit of power in to be like, and now it's pussy grabbing time. Like, it really don't matter. Children books? Man, these bitches filling these children books, bro. I'm gonna just have to grab some titties.
You mean these moms that got kids just showing up?
You gonna turn down this young adult novel dick, girl? Come on. If you are an aspiring author, Ursu said, and you go to a reading of someone who is famous and beloved and whose work you admire, and he suddenly takes an interest in you and your work, and he thinks you're special, and you start emailing, he wants to mentor you, and then suddenly it turns out all he wanted to do is have sex with you, those writers are left utterly devastated.
Right.
So this is the other part too.
It's the power dynamic.
This isn't right. Like, this may or may not, like, this doesn't sound like, so far, okay, I haven't finished reading this, doesn't sound like criminal behavior, but it's definitely immoral.
Right.
Like, can we not agree on that? Like, I come to you for mentorship and you just offer me some dick instead? Like,
everything ain't dick.
I just say no. Right. I'd rather you literally tell me, no, I don't want to mentor you, I'm trying to fuck, so I can make a decision.
Right, because you take my choice away, and like you said, it's one of those things where men think everything is, do you want some dick? You know, come over here to mentor me. Do you want some? No, I don't want no dick. Everything, the answer to everything ain't dick.
Right. The rumors about Alexie were already growing louder when about a week ago, Seattle-based writer Litza Drimosis began tweeting about him, calling on women to share their stories. NPR, like other news organizations, reached out to her. She told us that she'd had an affair with Alexie, but had remained friends with him until the stories about his sexual behavior surfaced. In this statement, Alexie denounced Drimosis, but before that, NPR began interviewing the women she referred to us. Mm-hmm. That's how he fucked up. It's a lie. It's a goddamn lie from the pit of hell. All right, well, let us talk to these other seven women. Oh, shit. More than one of them came out. Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Now, y'all, some of the women are telling the truth. It's a story about power and abuse of power, said Janine Walker, one of the three women who came forward on the record and whose stories NPR has corroborated with several sources. And all 10 women spoke to NPR about Alexie, who was a married man.
Ooh.
Here's another part of this shit that's wild. You still have people that call these people liars. NPR is not reporting this if they can't do their fucking research to verify these sources.
Not NPR.
Like a lot of these articles we read, they're like we actually have proof that someone tried to make a false report and as a prank and was immediately outed as like, these motherfuckers are lying. We couldn't verify any of this. And the whole reason they tried to do that was to be like, look at us. We're proving that the media is making up these stories about men trying to vilify them. Dog, they couldn't even get past the fucking outlet they were trying to fool. Like, you set out to get a fake story printed so you could be like, haha, we made that story up. See, all the stories are made up. We're discrediting all the women. You couldn't even get your fake story in. They're not reporting anything because they know that they're fucking held to standards of libel and slander. And they don't want to go to court and be like, well, we just reported this just because. You know, like, they're going to show their work in their stories. Like, no, we talked to this person, that person. They told us on this day this shit happened. This other person said they were a witness to it. They verified it. They were there. Like, what the fuck? Here are the text messages, the screenshots.
Come on.
In the age of receipts, dog. In the age of receipts, people still trying to do this. Anyway, most of the women wanted to remain anonymous, but a clear pattern emerged. The women reported behavior ranging from inappropriate comments, both in private and in public, to flirting that veered suddenly into sexual territory, unwanted sexual advances, and consensual sexual relations that ended abruptly. So he ghosted some women.
Mm-hmm.
That's another way to get your ass, like, he's just being a creep. It's just funny because being a creep now, is enough to get your ass on blast.
But men underestimate how many of y'all motherfuckers are goddamn creeps, and women have to deal with creepy people all the time, and creepy people turn into abusers, turn into doing all these fucked up behaviors, and I don't got the time to tell them between a normal regular ass creepy dude and the abuser. So you're all going the same category. I don't have time to shake it all out.
Well, this is also where a lot of people try to run away from the Me Too movement shit, is because it's like, oh, so y'all just throwing the creeps in with the rapists. There's a difference. Everybody knows a difference. But your creepy ass is still fucking up the workplace for women. So guess what? You go in the pot of this whole movement, which is about fucking up people's lives on the basis of, you know, sexual harassment, discrimination, and things of this nature. It all counts. Does it mean that you going to jail? Does it mean that they're trying to put you in prison like Harvey Weinstein? No. There's a difference between the people that they're trying to get, like, criminally prosecuted and the people that they're saying this person's behavior is trash, it needs to change, or they need to go. The fact that people try to act like that's not a distinction being made is really scary, because I've known some quote-unquote well-meaning people that act like there's no distinction between James Franco needs to change his behavior and Harvey Weinstein needs to go to prison. The women said Alexi had traded on his celebrity to lure them into uncomfortable sexual situations. Of course, I was really excited. I mean, Sherman Alexi, he's interested in my poems, Walker said. She's a poet and a teacher who was managing a writers in school program in Seattle when she arranged to have Alexi visit the classroom. Afterward, Alexi said he had checked out her poetry online and asked her to send him a manuscript. Alexi never got back to her on the poems. But they did become friendly. Walker says it was strictly platonic. One day they met to play basketball at a court in his office building. Afterward, Walker went to change her clothes in the restroom in his office. When I turned around, he was right behind me and just like physically very much in my space and leaned toward me and said, "Can I kiss you?" This nigga, he thought I was loving basketball. Play me for your heart.
I'm paying the song.
I said no, and I backed away. He kept moving forward, and I was like laughing and smiling and sweaty and whatever. And he said, "It's just, we were playing basketball. You remind me of the girlfriends I had in high school." And I just said, "Well, we're not in high school, Sherman." Alexi later apologized, and Walker said she stayed in touch with him for a while. She sent him her poems again, but never got anything back.
Right.
But a quick comment and a promise of more to come. She says Alexi is a big deal in her hometown, Seattle, and he's connected to the organization I work for, and if he had never expressed any interest in my poems, I probably wouldn't have pursued spending any time with him. But he did express an interest, and so then when I discovered that interest is actually physical, it just felt wrong.
Oh, baby, he want nothing to do with your poem, honey.
Right.
Mm-mm.
Erica, oh, go ahead.
No, you done sent it to him twice and you got zero results. He not interested, baby.
Erica Worth was a 22-year-old aspiring writer. When she first met Alexi as a Native American, he was a hero to her, and she hoped he might become a mentor. I guess it's not a thing I've ever been into, mentoring or being mentored. So right. I think a lot of people do push this down on people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need to find a mentor. You need to get with a mentor. You need to mentor people. That's your responsibility. And, you know, as a introvert and a loner, I'm kind of like, I'm not doing any of that shit. And I definitely don't want to be responsible to some nigga.
Right.
But it's interesting how much that is rife with abuse in many of these stories we cover. Oh, he offered to mentor me. Oh, I thought he would be a mentor. And it's like, mentor this dick. You know, like, it's no, like it's a power, it's already a power structure right there to be like, and now I can abuse you. And meanwhile, I may not be giving you anything. You know, some advice you can get for free on Google, something that I could have emailed you and told you, like, oh, just ask this person, try this thing.
Correct.
And instead, I'm over here like, come to my hotel room, and you're in a bad situation now, because it's like, I don't want to piss this dude off. That's a big deal in my industry. But clearly,
get blackballed.
Right, but clearly he's not about that shit. At any rate, after a year after their first meeting, he suggested that she come to one of his readings in Colorado. She went. Afterward, they walked back she walked back to his hotel with him. After chatting in the lobby, she started to leave, and he jumps over the coffee table and begins trying to kiss me. And I went into a state of non-reality. I had almost no sexual experience. I couldn't believe it. And he's like, come to my room. She did, and ended up in his bed. He's kind of taking my clothes off and kissing me, and I'm kind of like stock still, trying to convince myself this is okay, it's not working. And eventually I say, because I'm kind of scared of the situation, I'm a virgin. But it got really weird, because then he was still trying to work me over, and I'm just stock still. And I think at that point, in my opinion, he realized that if he wanted to have sex with me, he would have to violate me, and he'd have to rape me. So, and then he stopped. Worse says she stayed in touch with Alexi, hoping he would still be her mentor, or at least apologize.
You ain't gonna always get that closure, baby. Sometimes you gotta let shit go.
Several years later, they had a second sexual encounter, which also ended badly. Eventually, he did give her a positive quote for her first book and a letter of recommendation, which she now thinks was to keep her quiet.
Correct.
Their relationship became contentious after a series of angry emails. Worth decided to cut ties with him, disillusioned by the way he treated her, never admitting the way he'd done, never apologizing. I just was like, I don't ever want to be around this guy again. He's poisonous. He's not okay. Yeah, that's the other thing. He's married too, so in his mind, all this shit is illicit and wrong. You know what I mean? So he's like, I'm throwing these bitches away to cover up the evidence as soon as possible. You know, either way,
like,
you
they're
know,
not human beings with feelings and emotions.
I guarantee you that's the thought process. It's like, how do I get rid of this bitch? That's it. He's not thinking like, oh, well, you know what, you're a wonderful person, I really love your work, I see you as a full human being. That's all the act. And then the second shit gets inconvenient, you back the bitch. I gotta get this bitch out of here, this crazy. You know, like, it's no you can tell from the treatment. Like, it just goes straight from to covering up my tracks. Like, dude's a piece of shit. Alexi has enormous influence on the careers of Native American writers, and Worth worries about what he may say about her to others in the business. So does Alyssa Washuta. She met Alexi when she was getting ready to publish her first book, and she was hoping that he could help her with it. She went out one night with a group of people that included Alexi. She was chatting with him, seemingly apropos of nothing, meaning related to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Sherman told me that he could have sex with me if he wanted to, but he used a stronger word beginning with F. So he said, I could fuck you if I wanted to. And she said he didn't say it quietly, he had not whispered it. It seemed that the men we were talking to could have heard it. I couldn't believe that somebody would say something like that. So this was in a public setting with other people around, this older man who I didn't know, who was much more powerful than me. Washuta says that although she was worried that the other men who were there with them, all part of the local literary scene, had heard Alexi, she didn't have the nerve to say anything about it at the time. I felt I really needed his approval, and I needed his help in order to get this book off the ground. And so, as uncomfortable as I was, I felt I could laugh off that comment in a way, but I still felt that he had so much power that I should probably not make a fuss about this.
Right.
Eventually, they became colleagues at the Institute of American Indian Arts. They got along, but she says that once on a work trip to Santa Fe, he tried to lure her to his hotel room. Later, they had a disagreement over an essay of hers. Alexi implied she had plagiarized his work. Washuta became fearful that he would ruin her career. When she got another job, she decided to cut ties with the Institute because Alexi was a powerful member of the faculty. I think we did some really good work there, and I'm sure they continue to do really good work there, but I'm not a part of it, and that feels so lonely. I'm incredibly sad about it. All the allegations against him began to surface. As they began to surface, the Institute changed the name of its Sherman Alexi Scholarship to the MFA Alumni Scholarship. Alexi has not responded to our multiple efforts to contact him. It is clear from his statement that he is angry at Lisa Dramosis, whose tweets prompted these women to come forward. But if Alexi is angry, so are these women, which is why they're willing to talk.
Come on, dog.
Yep. So, all right, there you go. Even in the young adult novel world, right, it's still somebody out there trying to slang dick.
Right. Somebody in the chat room was saying that the lot of these targeted women were Native Americans.
Like marginalized group. By the way, that's kind of how this Me Too shit is happening, is more and more groups that aren't these white actresses are coming out. And it's really important, though.
Correct.
But it's telling at the same time that 3, 4, 5, 6 months later, you get groups of women who feel less powerful, less coveted, and have less of a platform coming out being like, me too.
And these are only the ones that came out. I can't even imagine the ones that were like, I'm not saying shit.
Right. Such as Asian American women in Hollywood say it's twice as hard for them to say me too.
I agree.
You know, and there's a whole BuzzFeed thing on that too. Like, after years of writing for theater, Marissa Tetron was overjoyed when she sold a film script to a studio in 2001. She had been paired with an executive who provided her with some constructive notes, first over the phone and then over dinner, where he began to inquire about her dating life. Their working relationship took a turn a week later when the fledgling writer received an email from the executive sent to her at 2 a.m. The subject line read, "Is this you?" And the body of the email was an explicit photo of an Asian porn star engaged in sexual acts. It's funny because I can't even imagine this as a dude. Can't even imagine.
Oh no, dudes never go through that.
Man. I can't even imagine having a business this is an idea I have. Okay, let's have a meeting. Hey man, let's go to dinner, talk about it. All right, cool. 2 a.m, I get a picture of like, is this you over here sucking this dick? What, man? What am I supposed to do with that?
What am I supposed to do with this?
I'm supposed to just call you tomorrow, act like good meeting yesterday. Everything's cool. Needless to say, my big break was completely taken away from me, she told BuzzFeed News. Of course, I took all the appropriate steps, sent the email to my reps, but that will forever be what I remember about getting one of my first jobs. Today, she's the co-creator and showrunner of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on ABC.
Wow.
A role seldom afforded to women, let alone Asian American women in Hollywood. The fact that I am in this position of running a TV show, that this is a very rare thing, is not lost on me at all. She said it took her years to get to where she is today, and along the way, she encountered a slew of barriers. But over time, she says, you learn how to work through the system. For her, that meant downplaying inappropriate and uncomfortable behavior at work. It's something we need to do to play well with others, to work and to succeed. For others, it means keeping quiet in the face of sexual harassment. We almost at the break. Let me go to the next session, guys.
Okay.
I'll bring us right back on the air. But, she's an Asian American actress, and obviously, you know, model minority myths and all that shit aside, she still felt more uncomfortable than I'm sure many white actresses coming forward and saying this shit.
Come on.
You know, like, if she's a woman in power, which is probably the only reason she can say shit now.
Correct.
Like, she already proven I can run this show. And it's a popular show and it's a major show, so I can say this now, but how many people just like, I can't say nothing right now. I'm not in a position to do this. Spurred on by the barrage of sexual harassment and assault allegations against Harvey Weinstein, scores of people in Hollywood have come forward with similar accusations against other former figures in the entertainment industry. In January 2018, hundreds of powerful women announced the inception of Time's Up, an initiative working to combat sexual misconduct in workplace across the nation. Yet Asian Americans in Hollywood have remained noticeably quiet on the whole. Of those who have come forward, the most recognizable figure has been Olivia Munn, who accused producer Brett Ratner of masturbating in front of her on a film set in 2004. Munn did not respond to BuzzFeed News request for an interview. Producers and actors who spoke to BuzzFeed News said they believe the fear of retribution hinders Asian American women from exposing abusers in an industry that has been historically hostile to them. I feel like we are raised to be hardworking and, for lack of a better word, quiet, with the idea being our hard work at the end of the day is going to pay off, said Jess Calder, who produced the 2018 comedic drama Blindspotting. She told BuzzFeed News in a joint interview with actor Janina Gavankar. That's universal. Mm-hmm. Not just culturally though, because obviously culturally there's an extra element to cultures with women of color in it, but that shut the fuck up, work hard, pretty much everybody that's not a white man has been told that.
Come on,
like, you're gonna rock the boat and you're not gonna get what you are worth if you tell people how you're being treated. That's basically what we pass down to everybody. And then when you triple that down with you're a woman, triple that down with your culturally, you know, the things that we put on women, it could be a head trip. Calder, who says she is often the only Asian American in the room, has oftentimes felt uncomfortable speaking up at work because I was raised to feel like I'm lucky to even have a seat at the table. Like, what am I going to do? Risk it?
Right. Versus white men feel like I have the right to be here regardless if I earned or deserved it.
Janet Yang, a producer, told the 93 who was behind the 1993 Joy Luck Club drama, told BuzzFeed News that a paucity of Asian women in the industry makes coming forward to with sexual misconduct allegations a lonely and daunting road. There just aren't that many in front of the camera Asian women. Ocean's 8 and Crazy Rich Asian star Awkwafina, who last month signed Time's Up pledge to fight workplace harassment and sexual misconduct, expressed a similar notion. The sad truth is that it doesn't take a person of color to change things in America, as it always been. It takes a powerful white woman to change things in America, she told BuzzFeed News. Even the current climate of Me Too, Awkwafina says she understands why some women may choose to stay silent. You don't want to speak out because you're not going to get invited to the Golden Globes anymore. You're not going to get hired for that movie. While Gavankar did not detail any sexual harassment, she pointed out that the indignities Asian American women experience aren't always sexual in nature. Such was a claim made by actor Charlene Yee, who in October tweeted that when she met David Cross, he made fun of her pants, and when she looked at him dumbstruck, he responded, "What's the matter? You don't speak English? Ching chong, ching chong." On Twitter, Cross replied, "I'm truly sorry. I heard her going to say that Yee may have misinterpreted his impression of a Southern redneck." Anna Akana, a YouTube comedian and actor, told BuzzFeed News that often unsolicited touching and lewd comments is compounded by racist implications. It's almost always, "Where are you from? Hey, soy sauce. Oh my God. I hear Asian girls are so good in bed." Just stereotypical bullshit things, she said, rattling off examples of remarks that she's heard over the years. "As an Asian American woman, people view you in this tokenized way. That Asian American women have been forced to accept widespread harassment as normal may be one of the reasons why even those with visibility and job security choose not to share their experiences with the public."
Right.
Yeah, I'll say I'm noticing that in this article. Even in this article, it's like, well, this is why it's fucked up and this is why no one's coming forward. But even these women aren't coming forward and being like, "And these are the experiences I've had with this shit."
They just go shit fucked up.
Right. It's like, it's sad, but it's like, even in their way of being like, this, the industry is fucked up and we can't come forward, none of these women are really telling stories like, "And this is what happened." Just more like, this is why there's an absence of us talking about what happened, because right. We know we better not say shit.
Correct.
Yeah, so this is, I'm not surprised at all that you know, and like I said, we just had that whole story with the Native American women that happen to be writers in young adult literature. Like, that's such a small group of people, but that also is why the reason that dude probably felt, "Hey, I can prey on these women. What they gonna do?"
Right. What power do they have, quote right. unquote?
Microsoft reportedly received hundreds of sexual harassment and discrimination complaints. They received 238 internal complaints pertaining to sexual harassment and gender discrimination between 2010 and 2016.
And what did they do about it? Nothing.
Well, apparently not enough, because there's a lawsuit by the female employees going right now.
Come on.
It was filed in 2015. The suit alleges that women working in the U.S.-based technical positions at the company were denied promotions and or pay raises because of an internal rating system that discriminated against female workers. The Fortune 500 company has publicly denied the women's claims, insisting that out of the 118 gender discrimination complaints, only one was founded.
I don't believe that.
That math, that's, so 117 women are just crazy.
I guarantee you the scale is fucked up. They know it's skewed a certain way and the numbers are used a certain way. Ain't nobody stupid.
Like, get the fuck out of my face. 117 women just crazy? That's it? You a big ass company? Like, listen,
all these people?
I don't know what to tell you. I guess, bitches be crazy? Oh, okay, that's a good legal defense. I mean, yeah, I mean, what can we say? Diversity and inclusion are critically important to Microsoft. We want employees to speak up if they have concerns, and we strive to make it easier really? For them to do so. Do you?
Right.
Is that what you want? Is that what?
Is that the reason why you got a lawsuit, because y'all was handling everything right?
Is that what calling 99.9% of the claims unfounded? Is that what you're telling? That's the message? That's the message?
The same men that's paid to actually look at these things.
Yeah, the company said it spends about $55 million annually to promote diversity and inclusion among its 74,000 U.S. employees. In 2017, the company also eliminated the previously required arbitration agreements, for employees who filed sexual harassment complaints. It was a move that would theoretically make victims much more comfortable speaking out. However, female employees claim Microsoft made a habit of disregarding their reports. Court documents state a female Microsoft intern raped by a male Microsoft intern, reported rape to the supervisor at HR, and yet forced to work alongside her accused rapist. When victim told HR she was considering obtaining a restraining order, she was informed she would be moved off the team if she did so. Her accused rapist offered full-time employment at Microsoft. I don't know how is that one of the unfounded claims?
Probably so.
The plaintiff's lawyers are pursuing a class action lawsuit, which could cover more than 8,000 women. A trial date has not been set yet.
That sounds about right. Yeah, you got to do right by people. Mm. And this is the shit they're trying to stop, these class action lawsuits that hold people accountable for fucked up shit.
All right, let's move into some other stuff, guys.
Mm-hmm. That's enough trash. That's enough.
That was a lot of, it's a lot of trash, everybody. I understand. Nah, it's a lot. Maybe we can do something a little more positive, guys. All right,
let's do it.
Let's try to do some white people news, if that works for everyone. I know that that typically cheers you guys up, right? all right. Let me always start white people news the same way. Try to get us a little Jimmy Jam, a little Diddy. Get us in the appropriate mood. Today being no exception.
Mm-hmm.
Another white person right, appropriating right, our music.
Right, classic.
Mm-hmm. Another one of these white classics of a black classic that they have now unseasoned, as I like to call it. They have washed all the seasoning off.
Putting up underneath the sink, dipped it in the water.
Made it their own. Washed it like a chicken in the sink.
Well, it might sound crazy what I'm about to say. Sun shines is here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that can go to space. With an airline, I don't care, baby, by the way.
Cause I'm happy.
Happy long if you feel like
take it high.
What happiness mean to you? How can that belong if you know that that's what you wanna do?
Come on.
Bring me down.
Like you hating on the song, Karen.
Boo.
I thought you loved the song.
The original version.
Oh, wow. Wow. You see what I got to deal with over here, guys?
No acoustic guitar version.
You Negroes will never be happy with anything.
I sure won't then. Nope.
I swear, Ben Carson was
I
right.
Got high standards.
Well, let's get to some delightful, whiteful news. Okay, guys. Michael Cera may have married his mystery girlfriend.
Oh shit.
Yes, right, y'all.
Apparently she's still a mystery. They don't even know her name because she a mystery in the article.
Michael Cera, and they don't even know if she got married.
Right.
Man, does she exist? Is she from Canada?
Right. Is she a robot? What's happening here?
The Arrested Development alum was spotted in Brooklyn on Sunday wearing a wedding band and longtime girlfriend Nadine. He was wearing Nadine?
Yeah.
What? Wearing a wedding band with a wedding band. Okay, all right, cool. The couple, who have kept their relationship private, secretly wed, a source told us weekly, but it's unclear when. The actor's agent declined a comment when reached by the Daily News. Cera's kept his personal life under wraps by Scott Pilgrim vs. the World co-star Albie Plaza revealed in November 2016 that they dated for almost a year and a half and almost eloped. We drove across the country after we shot that movie and almost got married in Vegas, she said during an interview on RuPaul and Michelle Visage's podcast, What's the Tea? No, the other one.
The other tea.
Cera is currently starring on Broadway with Chris Evans in Lobby Hero. So there you guys go. Michael Cera out here secretly getting wed. Fox News host Jesse Waters is in a divorce fight after cheating on his wife with a 25-year-old employee. All the tea. All that Fox News tea.
All that rosemary tea. That green tea.
All that sugarless Earl Grey tea.
Come on.
He's in hot waters with the missus now. Jesse Waters, 39, is in the midst of a divorce fight with his wife of 9 years, Noelle, after admitting to an affair with his 25-year-old associate producer, Emma DeGiovine. The up-and-coming Fox News star, who just landed his own show last year, told the bosses about the affair shortly after Noelle filed for divorce. Boy, they got some messy men's over there at Fox News.
Come on.
I mean, I guess they messy everywhere, but I mean, in an environment where you basically say women ain't shit, I mean, what do you expect these motherfucking white men to be doing?
What do you expect?
Like, of course they're fucking the help. Of course.
Standards, who has those?
Dio DeGiovine was transferred to work from the Ingraham angle, but she and Waters had continued to date. That's him and his wife Noelle, and then that's the 25-year-old associate producer down here.
Yeah.
Oh yes. Yeah. Like his wife never had a chance.
Yeah, they can cut and paste. Yeah, she's a younger version of her.
Yeah.
With darker hair.
He done upgraded.
Mm-hmm.
Here's him with Donald Trump, the two thumbs up. His role model. Within 24 hours of Jesse Waters voluntarily reported to the chief of human resources on November 2017 that he was in a consensual relationship with a woman on his staff, management met with both parties and a decision was made for the woman to be transferred to work on another program on the network where she currently remains.
Oh, so in this instance, we can get a transfer?
Right.
Right, we transferring the woman out? Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he had an affair with her. Waters married Noelle Iguagiatato, I don't know, in 2009. They also met on the job at Fox News. Well, I guess Tavis Smiley has a point. If they can do it at Fox News.
No, he does not.
Fox News is the gold standard, Karen, and if you can fuck your coworkers at Fox News.
The world is too big. Be most sociable.
Where else are you supposed to find women if you can't do it at?
You can find them a lot of places.
If you can't go to Bella Noches for some women, where are you supposed to go, Karen?
I don't know, but there's more places than Bella Noches.
He was working at Bill O'Reilly's show. Oh, that's a special. She was working for the advertising and promotions department, was the host of a web show called I Maxed Out. In 2011, the couple had a pair of twin daughters. Noelle never returned from maternity leave, while water star Rose at Fox News. Oh, I know she regrets that shit every day.
Right, so she basically quit work.
Mm-hmm. Attorneys for both Noelle and Jesse Waters did not comment on to the Daily News. And a woman at Giovine's New Jersey home declined to comment. Known for his brash, macho, and sometimes obnoxious style, Waters hosted a segment on the O'Reilly's Factor that combined man on the street with ambush journalism. Yeah, it's also not funny.
Right.
It was like, let's go down to Chinatown and make fun of Asian people, and that would be the whole segment.
Right, you know nobody thinks this is funny, right?
According to his LinkedIn profile, DGL Vine became Waters' associate producer in June 2016 when his segment was still part of the O'Reilly show. Waters' humorous approach fell flat at times, such as an October 2016 segment filmed in New York City's Chinatown. It was panned as racist after he wandered the street asking locals if they knew karate and how often their watches were stolen.
Right.
The segment Waters World was spun out into a weekly show January 2017. It airs at 8 p.m. on Saturdays, combining humor and political news in a fresh slant aimed at a younger audience. When O'Reilly was ousted from the network in April 2017 over revelations that he'd secretly settled numerous sexual harassment suits, Waters also replaced Eric Bolling on The Five. Bolling himself was ousted in September over sexual harassment allegations. They're playing musical sexual harassment chairs, ain't they?
Come on.
Like, what the fuck, dog? Waters is said to be a favorite cable news personality of President Donald Trump. Well, I wonder why. He even dined with the commander in chief on Monday. Trump asked Waters and former aide Sebastian Gorka to dinner at the White House because he couldn't get enough of them on TV. Trump even signed the menu, which Waters tweeted a picture of. It read, "To Jesse, you are great."
Trash.
But yeah, they out here shaking the table with no spices on it.
Apparently so.
We'll do one more. Let's see. Joey Lawrence files for bankruptcy. Melissa and Joey Starr had $60 in cash and $8,000 in the bank. Damn. Joey Lawrence fell on some hard times. Who is Joey Lawrence?
You know that was my next question.
I don't know who he is. Is he Joey from Blossom? Is that the same dude?
Honey, that's how I judge, honey. Okay, from Blossom.
It is him?
Yes.
Whoa, I can't believe I got that right. Joey Lawrence and his wife have filed for the bankruptcy after plummeting into debt, according to The Blast, which has published details of the family's dire financial situation. After the cancellation of Melissa and Joey, Lawrence's income plummeted. He made $534,000 in 2015, but only $58,000 the following year. He claims he currently has $60 in cash and $8,000 in the bank. The actor reportedly earns between $4,000 and $6,000 a month, a stark contrast from the $500,000 salary he made while employed by ABC Family, now called Freeform. The network canceled Melissa and Joey, which co-starred Melissa Joan Hart in 2015 after five seasons. With the two young children at home, Lawrence notes in his bankruptcy paperwork that family expenses leave them $18,000 in debt each month. He and his wife, who was employed, have taken...
Unemployed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why would that be news? Of course she's not employed. Have taken to selling their possessions on eBay at a thrift store, at a thrift store called Buffalo Exchange. Damn, they're going to the thrift store on eBay. Among the debts are $88,000 in back taxes, $132,000 in credit card debt, and almost $100,000 for automobile. The family three cars have been repossessed. They gonna have to put themselves up by the bootstraps. Alright, so let's go ahead and get to some sore ratchetness and get out of here. As you guys can hear the doorbell, Amazon is here. Okay.
Alright, because I was like, what? Who ringing the doorbell?
I don't have time for this shit no more. I have boxes to open. A Hagerstown man is held in a sword attack. Hagerstown man was being held on Monday on $25,000 bond on charges he assaulted a man with a sword. Michael Edward O'Neill, 26, of North Cleveland Avenue, guess the race, black, was charged with first and second degree assault, reckless endangerment, and theft for the incident. It happened at 1:47 a.m. on Sunday. Police went to an apartment where a man with a cut above his eye said he had been attacked with his own sword by O'Neill. The man told police he, O'Neill, and O'Neill's girlfriend were in his apartment drinking when O'Neill began arguing with the woman. The charging document said O'Neill was beating the woman and tried to drag her down the apartment her feet when the man intervened. The girlfriend told police O'Neill hit her with a folding chair during the assault. God, what the WWE shit was going on?
I know what's happening here.
Who has a folding chair just sitting around their house? There's so many questions.
I'm ready at all times. Where's my folding chair?
O'Neill got on the top rope and grabbed the sword. He removed it from a scabbard and struck the man. Hearing the commotion, a neighbor entered the apartment and saw O'Neill holding the sword against the head of the man who was lying on the floor. O'Neill left the apartment with the sword, the man's cell phone, several cans of beer, and a bottle of vodka from the man's refrigerator.
Oh, shit.
And that's why they had to call it in. He took the alcohol. An officer took the woman back to the apartment she shared with O'Neill and found him there. O'Neill was initially uncooperative with the police officers. He went hands-on and forced him. Why is this article moving? What the fuck? They went hands-on and forced his arms behind his back to place him in handcuffs. O'Neill continued to be uncooperative at central booking, screaming at the top of his lungs, banging on doors, and covering surveillance cameras with toilet paper. O'Neill had to be restrained and pepper sprayed when he resisted being handcuffed at the facility. Shit. Yeah, that nigga had an entire fucking episode. All right, guys, we'll be back tomorrow with more of whatever this is. Me and Bossy plan on doing This Too Much on Tuesday.
Okay.
I'll let you guys know the time when I know it. This is the finale of the season. It's not really like pressing that we have to do it immediately, but we are gonna do it Tuesday is the plan for right now. So until then, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.